And welcome back to Trek Talk, episode 4. I'm your co-host, Garen Gillen.
And I'm your other co-host, John Alley. Welcome back. It's been a little while.
Time flies between these episode recordings,
Yeah.
I tell you.
I think we should probably go to a week apart, but with our schedule, it'd be almost impossible.
We're quite busy.
Yeah. And getting
Got
busier.
more projects that we'll may mention on the show today. So, how's the Danubian flu progressing? Hopefully.
It's killing me. It's killing me. I wish it would end me so I can like regenerate or something.
Maybe you should need some of that decontamination stuff they use on Enterprise.
The gel. Yeah. Well.
Maybe that. Never mind. I'll go there. Oh man, what else is going on in Captain John's world?
Just same old, just trying to get all the reading that I want to get done. It seems like every book I finish, three more takes its place.
What are you reading right now?
Oh, right now I just well, right now I just finished Harry Potter and Chamber of Secrets, but now I'm moving on. I'm reading the source book to the 4 Year War,
Nice.
and actually I'm probably going to be starting Star Trek: The Entropy Effect, like one of the old novels that
Yeah,
we're
that's.
that's
Is that the
a,
one we spoke about?
yeah
That's
that
the Vondo McIntyre, right?
yeah that's the one we're gonna be like reviewing later
Yep.
on.
Yeah, mine. I ordered mine. It just came the other day, actually.
Yeah,
That's.
I've had mine for a while. I picked mine up at Second and Charles, and but I haven't never read it.
I had. I mean, I had. I know that's. I think my those. I probably already had that, but it's back in California somewhere.
You need to get all that stuff here.
I got a bulk of it back. I mean, the last time I was there, I brought back all the FASA Star Trek role-playing game stuff. But it's tough. Yeah, I mean, I have to ship it back, basically. I mean, if I'm, you know, I mean, I can take a few items at a time, but I mean, they're literally boxes of books.
Right, yeah. I wish I there's stuff that I don't know what happened to in the many moves that I wish I still had, but it's like I don't know what happened to some of the stuff.
Yeah, and that book was one of the first. So it was a so Bantam did. I think they had the license. I think for a few years, like they did the early novels, and I think they're the ones that also published the James Blish's adaptions of the episodes.
Yeah, Bantam did those, but then with Star Trek: The Motion Picture, it went to Pocket Books.
Yeah.
Which is that a division of Bantam? I can't remember. No, that's a Simon and Schuster is Pocket Books. I think The Entropy Effect was the second novel published, original novel after the novelization of The Motion Picture.
Yep, I know it was an early. Was there? What was the first one then? Was that
the first
the
original
first?
novel
Yeah, so it was.
that was Spock Must Die.
And that was a pocketbook?
No, that was no, give me a second, I'll get it. That was no, it was a Bantam.
Okay. So pocketbooks got the license and they did a novelization of the motion picture. So you're saying there was there was another novel of pocketbooks, and then it was the Entropy Effect, or was the Entropy Effect the first?
I believe it was the Entropy Effect was the first right after the motion picture.
Okay. All right.
Then it was I think it was the Klingon Gambit, and then I can't remember what the next one was.
That was kind of the golden era of the Star Trek novels. I mean, pocketbooks, I mean, they had it for quite some time through, definitely, you know, all the way through the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Entropy Effect probably came out in 79, if not 80, I would think.
Yeah, I don't have mine handy to look at the date, but yeah, I believe it was like right after the motion picture, so.
They did pretty well, and those are definitely a good series. I don't think Pocket, are they even around anymore? I don't know.
Yeah, they still have the publication rights.
Is it? Oh, I thought it was a different publisher.
I'm sorry, what?
I thought the current novels are a different publisher.
Nope. It's Pocket Books. The little kangaroo.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
It's nice to have everything handed, like, right on my shelf next to me, so I can grab.
I know, man.
Fact check.
Your Geekatorium is looking better.
It's getting there.
Yeah, I finished up season 2 of TNG. I'm now on season 3. I'm about 4 or 5 episodes in.
It's about time. Yeah, I just finished up season 3, and then somebody said, oh, you need to wait for me so we can discuss it. Come on. The first episode of Best of Both Worlds, and you want me to wait now. Thanks.
All right, I'll let you watch the first episode, since that's the continuation of the Borg episodes. Best of Both Worlds, part 2.
It's been forever since I've watched that, and I forgot how good it was. It's that was the first cliffhanger, I think, in Star Trek.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, basically, like between the seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the season. The episode ending right with Riker saying fire.
Yeah. In fact, not only was it the first first cliffhanger, it was the first two-parter, right? Yeah. Well, no.
No.
No. The Menagerie of TOS was the two-parter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But technically that was a clip episode, so.
The Menagerie?
Yeah, it's a clip episode of clips that had never been seen before.
I mean, they definitely used. I wouldn't call it a clip. I don't know. When I think of clip episode, I think of not a good episode of Menagerie. I mean, it had a good. I don't know. I would say it was at least one episode worth of the wraparound story, which.
Yeah. What was that clip episode that you'd recently watched? Riker?
Well, that was the last episode of season 2 of TNG. Gosh, I may have to say that is the worst episode of ever of Star Trek. It was, ugh, gosh,
even worse than Sub Rosa.
I have to rewatch that one.
Okay,
it was called Shades of Grey. It was the last episode of season 2 of TNG. It's basically Riker and Geordi are down on this planet doing the survey or something. Riker gets bit. Or something, and he goes into a coma essentially, and the entire rest of the episode is him remembering recent events. I mean, they don't even make sense. There's no story behind his memory or what's going on in his mind. It's just clips of episodes. And what's hilarious is sometimes the clips are from only a couple episodes ago.
I tried looking that up. I thought that one might have been around the time of one of the writer strikes.
It was, yeah.
So
season 2, I thought. I'd have to research it. I thought the writer's strike started between season one and two, but it still might have been just remnants of the fact that they didn't have enough episodes. And
yeah.
I still would have thought that, geez, I mean, it had a mini wraparound story. I mean, or I would have thought they still could have come up with something that at least was more than just showing clips from like two episodes ago.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was either the writer's strike or, hey, we're over budget, we need a clip episode.
Yeah. Now season three, yeah, you can definitely see.
Oh my gosh. Already
the changes in season three.
Oh yes. Season three is when the Next Generation came into its own. I think the sets started getting better. The writing was better. People were more comfortable with the characters.
I think that's when Michael Piller started. And then I think also Ira Stephen Bear,
yes,
was on season three. Of course, he went on to become the showrunner of DS9. What else? Uniform. I forgot. So I forgot that they had a mix of uniforms in season three. So the main characters had the new style, but everyone else still was wearing the season one and two uniforms.
Yeah, all the background characters were wearing the spandex.
And this was like the interim design, because it was a jumpsuit. It was a new design, but it was still a jumpsuit before they went to the separate top piece.
No, the main characters was still in a two piece, but it was slightly different. It didn't have the cummerbund kind of waistband at first, and then the top had more like stitching to like make it form fitting, and then like midway, a little bit before the mid season. The main crew started going to more of a flat, their division color was just like, didn't have any stitching. And then they had the cummerbund that led to the more of the yanking and pulling.
I'm pretty sure though. I think it is a one piece. It still looks like a jumpsuit. Cause I thought that was the whole idea why. Because Patrick Stewart, he always did the pull down of the top part of the uniform when he sat down, and I'm pretty sure that it looks like a full jumpsuit on season three.
It looks like it, but it's definitely a upper and or lower and upper. Because when Kara was watching a few episodes, I was pointing out the differences in the uniforms. Like, she just gave me some eye rolls.
I was going to say, did she call you a nerd?
Yeah, basically.
Is season three the season that had yesterday's Enterprise? Or is that?
Yeah. Yes, I believe so.
Nice.
Because that's where they changed up the uniform even more.
Yeah. That's considered by many to be like in the top 10 of best Star Trek episodes, I believe.
Oh yeah, that definitely.
The other thing they added in season 3 was there was a new Enterprise D model. So the first two seasons, it was the big one. I think it's 10-foot long model, and it was a little hard to do certain filming angles. So they made a smaller one that I think was only 5 or 6 feet long. Mm. And you can tell there's season three. There's different angles of the Enterprise that the first couple seasons didn't have, and it looks good. Like, the model itself looks better.
Oh yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about, because I noticed there's slight difference between the big one and the smaller one, but the smaller one does look a lot better in the close-ups. It has more, I guess, the Aztec-ing.
Yeah. So, good stuff.
I'm correct on the uniform. The first part of season three, they had like stitching down on like the left and right, and then make it form fitting. But then midway through, they replaced that. But the whole thing was just two pieces, except for some of the females. Some of the females still wore one piece jumpsuits with the collar.
Hmm. I'll have to check that again more closely.
Oh, and next episode you'll tell me I'm right. So,
I did notice the stitching. Oh, that's one of those things that I don't think you would have noticed back in the day.
Oh no.
But you see it now on the 55-inch screen and HD.
But it still looks. Yeah, good. I mean, it still looks good. I think it was. I think they just made it more flat to accommodate more, I guess, the Shatner spread for the different actors.
Yep.
So another thing you never see again, I don't believe, is the scant.
The scant?
Yeah. The few of the male. It's a skirt, but a few of the male. Male. Crew members wore.
Yes, I remember that. I wasn't sad to see that go.
I think the thing I hated worst about it was the little ankle boots that he wore with it.
Yeah, that was I didn't miss that.
Although, I mean, I'm looking at Memory Alpha, and they show it like one crew member wearing a female wearing the skirt with actual pants. So it was like you could wear in different configurations, I guess.
Interesting.
So, okay.
All right, we're gonna move on to news.
Yes, give me 1 second.
This report has been brought to you by the Federation News Service.
All right. So we've got a few interesting news items, actually, this time. And there's one that we didn't cover. It's a couple weeks old now. But since we've mentioned it on previous episodes, I thought we'd just go through that real quick. So the Axanar... lawsuit was settled. So Axanar was the first fan film that was sued by Paramount and CBS.
It's the only fan film that was sued.
I think the Star Trek fan films is probably like a niche. I wouldn't say niche, but it's an element of Star Trek fandom that, I wouldn't say everyone is necessarily into.
Right.
But with this one, it definitely made bigger news, right? More mainstream news. I mean, carried some articles about it. Because hey, I mean, you've got this huge corporation suing. Basically a group of people that, just basically volunteering their time to do something they love, and they get hit with a lawsuit.
Go ahead and say it. It's the man keeping the little guy down.
That's right.
Fight the power.
And it kind of blew out of proportion. And, I have to say, this was – so, we talked about our backgrounds in the first episode of – I was kind of not in, maybe 10, 15 years, I hadn't been following Star Trek closely. or I really kind of sci-fi and fantasy fandom in general until I started getting back into it a couple of years ago. But I never remembered just kind of the negative aspects of fandom back in the day, John. I just remember.
I don't remember. I mean, I don't remember really any negative effects of fandom. I mean, that you had, well, when we were growing up, you could mail away for the fanzines and stuff like that, which had fanfic and stuff like that. But it hasn't been till, actually, I think Star Wars was when the fan film started getting big.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I remember back then. I mean, yeah, you had limited access to it. I mean, you had the fanzines, conventions, you know, the books. I think this whole thing surrounded Axanar, not just from CBS and Paramount, but even in the fan community. There was an element of haters on Axanar, and it's just within the fandom itself, which I just found bizarre.
And if you haven't seen anything regarding Axanar, go to either axanarproductions.com or I think it's .com, or look it up on YouTube and watch Prelude to Axanar, and you'll see some amazing footage.
Yep. And I guess, you know, the fan film, for some reason, they seem to latch on to Axanar and blame them because, all right, you know, this supposedly brought about the fan film guidelines, which there weren't any up until, you know, I don't know, 6 months to a year ago. And, you know, you can call them they're pretty restrictive, but Axanar doesn't deserve to have put the blame on them for these guidelines. I mean, I haven't watched a lot. You know, I watched Star Trek Phase 2, and then Star Trek Continues, and then, you know, Prelude to Axanar. And those to me were the ones that, They really kind of showed the progression of you know, high production values, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, yeah, Axanar happened to be the one that, I don't know, they did it too well, it looked too good or whatever. And
yeah, it was too much competition for the studios, I think. You know, if fans can do this by, you know, crowdsourcing. And it's like, well, why are we putting all this money into it?
Yeah, which is, to me, just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I don't see how they, you know, it's helping Star Trek, not, you know, but yeah. If it wasn't Axanar, it would have been another one.
Well, that's the thing I don't understand is because I think Axanar got the bad rap, but I mean, like you mentioned, Star Trek Phase 2 and Star Trek Continues, along with Star Trek Renegades, I mean, they'd been doing this for years prior, doing full episodes, and there was never anything from the studios, and then all of a sudden it's like Axanar was coming out, and it's like, well, the studio's like, we got to put a halt to this,
and that's the one they picked. Mm-hmm. So it's, to me, it's just very unfair to blame Axanar for, you know, the guidelines and this thing.
And it's like other franchises, well, the other franchise, I guess, Star Wars, already had guidelines in place. And so it's like those guidelines aren't something new that just CBS, you know, put up. Other studios put them up to protect their intellectual properties.
Yeah. And you mentioned the crowdfunding, which I think is an element to this as well, which, you know, crowdfunding is a phenomenon in itself that came out only in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, where you can, you know, where you can raise money to you know, create something. And, you know, and they did that with Axanar, but they did it with Star Trek Continues as well.
Yeah. And it's like, the guidelines for those who haven't heard, new productions are limited to 2 15-minute segments. And they can't, after that, you can't really do any prequels or sequels or anything like that. And one that like just blew my mind, you can't have any actors that have previously appeared on any production of Star Trek, which I think that's kind of, you know, limiting. If there's actors that want to portray other characters, I think that's left up to the actors.
Yeah, I agree. I don't get that. I mean, if someone wants to do it, they should be able to do it regardless of who they are.
Right.
So anyway, the lawsuit was settled. Axanar, they're going to be allowed to, you know, they can complete the film project, but they will be limited to 2 15-minute segments. The fan film guidelines don't allow prequels or sequels either.
Which, I mean, they made an amazing prelude to Axanar that runs 20 minutes. And I mean, the visual effects and on that is amazing. So I'm still looking forward to the 2 15-minute segments. At this point, I'll take whatever I can get.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Trek Yards did a good interview with Alec Peters, and he talked about the other things that they're maybe able to do to flesh it out. You know, this doesn't stop them from doing other tie-ins like graphic novels. You know, they're going to release a book about the production making of and some things. So, you know. In fact, you know, you and I actually reached out and talked to Alec about our ideas of producing a fan produced RPG supplement.
Yep.
For Axanar in the style of the FASA, the FASA books
from the 80s.
Compatible with their rule set, so that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's definitely in the beginning stages of planning. We're working on getting a team together, seeing who'd be interested. So,
yeah, that should be fun. And then, you know, we've got Alec Peters. He said he'd love to come on Trek Talk. So we'll have to set up an interview with him. And then also, it was kind of independent of this. You know, it was only a couple weeks ago that, you know, I was able to find Guy McLemore on Twitter. So Guy was one of the three designers of the FASA role-playing game. And his friend, Greg Poline, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, but they actually live in the same city. And Greg was, so there was three designers of the role-playing game. It was Guy McLemore, Greg Poline, and I think it was David DePoole, who had passed away some years ago. So they both said they'd love to. Guy said he'd love to come on and be on the podcast as well, and he was going to ask Greg if he wanted to join. So that'll be an upcoming interview that should be coming soon.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
And so, we also, I think we're going to try to get John Thiessen.
Yeah.
He was the creator of the FASA supplement, the 4 Years War and Return to Axanar. I think he might have done a couple others. I'm not sure. I don't have every supplement available.
Oh, he did. He did several. Yeah, he did. I think he did the Romulan War books and adventure. He did, and a couple of the other adventures. In fact, I have to look. He might have done the intelligence manual too.
Oh, really? I do have that one. I won't step away from the mic to grab it, but
yeah. So I sent an email to him a couple days ago. I haven't heard back yet. So we'll see. So that's it. So pretty good stuff. Adding to our list of projects.
Yes, making our wives even more Star Trek widows.
What else we got in the news? So we've got some Discovery casting was announced.
Yes, additional casting. I think there is three more cast announced, cast members yep. announced. Do you have that? I don't have that up right now. Sorry.
I've got it. I'm actually, so someone put together a kind of a summary of all the characters and cast that they released so far. So there's three new cast members. The first one is Terry Serpico, who will be playing a Starfleet admiral with the name of Anderson, Admiral Anderson. He's a high-ranking Starfleet official. Not, you know, really no details on, you know, how big his part will be. But we've got a Starfleet admiral. The next is, and I know I'm going to mess this name up, but, Malik Pankali will be playing Chief Medical Officer Dr. Nambu of the USS Shenzhou. He's playing a human, according to this. And then finally, Sam Varth O'Meos, who's playing Ensign Connor, a junior officer assigned to USS Shenzhou.
Well, one thing on him, it says I don't know if it's the same thing you're looking at. It says he is enrolled at Starfleet Academy, so I don't know if he in his bio.
Is he an acting ensign like Wesley?
Oh, God. It looks like he could be young enough. So no, I said Ensign Connor is enrolled at Starfleet Academy, and then his assignment is junior officer on the USS Shenzhou. So I don't know if maybe they pull him from the academy to join the crew, or he just graduated.
Yeah, I would think he would probably just. It doesn't. It's kind of weird that they say he's a junior officer in Starfleet Academy.
Yeah. It says, while Connor is enrolled at Starfleet Academy, he has been placed on the USS Shenzhou crew as a junior officer. So kind of almost sounds like a Wesley-esque.
I don't know about that. That's like, to me, it's like, if you're an ensign, that means you've already graduated the academy.
Well, I mean, even though Wesley was an acting ensign after he, which...
Don't get me started on Wesley.
When you're in the third season, you'll see. But he missed his ship to take his academy exams. So Picard just went ahead and commissioned him as a full ensign, and he got to wear his command uniform and his gold communicator pin instead of his silver.
Don't get me started.
Why do you have to hate on Wesley? Hate.
It's the military protocol. I mean, the whole thing of a Starfleet captain can just bless someone and make them an officer. I don't know.
He's more like a sheriff, you know. He can deputize anybody he wants to.
I'd be more happy if they said this guy, Instant Connor, if they call him a midshipman, that would make more sense, because when you're in the academy, you're called a midshipman. And once you graduate, then you become the ensign is the lowest officer rank.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think maybe he just graduated the academy.
That's probably, I mean, I think maybe, yeah, he's probably like just graduated, assigned, and we'll see.
See, that's cool. And, you know, the fact that it's kind of gets into the other discussion around, okay, what's happening with the USS Shenzhou? How important is that to the series? Why is there a USS Shenzhou when there's also supposedly going to be a Discovery, you know, the USS Discovery? These people, you know, there's several people that they've said are crew. I mean, specifically, the crew of the Shenzhou. So,
do you want to get into the rumor hashtag fake news possibility?
Fake news. Don't get me on my fake news rant around Star Trek Discovery.
Well, that's all we have right now.
Yeah.
So one of the articles I read is that and take it however you want. It's a lot of this stuff coming out is rumored anyway. So the rumor is that the USS Shenzhou in possibly the first episode either has in some major battle gets damaged beyond repair, so it actually gets refit and the Shenzhou becomes the USS Discovery. So it's one article that was on some site that I'd never seen, supposedly that has to do with science and technology. But it looks like it was thrown up. It had some other information about the cast and all that, but that's the main thing from that article that stood out. But
I mean, it's certainly possible. I just the fact that there's, you know, it's the show is called Discovery. There's going to be a USS Discovery unless there's been some red herring or something. But
the thing with if a ship was like heavily damaged but still could be refit, usually they keep the ship's original name. You know they don't christen it something else. Unless it's the Enterprise, then they have one conveniently
ready to go. I don't know. I it doesn't seem to make a lot of. But, you know, if ship was that heavily damaged and then had to be rebuilt, like that would take time. So to me, if they did that, it would have to be almost like the first episode takes place and then the second episode or whatever, like, would have to be some time later,
right?
Because, you know, to completely repair a ship and make it look different, you know, so I don't know. I don't think that's it, but you know, I just, you know, it's interesting to speculate on to why there are two ships and how they're going to interact and what does that mean.
Well, the ship designs are like completely different as well from what we've seen the wire frame up of the Shenzhou and the teaser of the Discovery. I mean,
yeah. Well, it doesn't. We don't know that wireframe ship is the Shenzhou. It's makes sense that it would be. And you're right. It's completely different than what we've seen of the Discovery. So yeah. We'll see.
You want to move on to the next big Discovery rumor?
The other
quote Klingons.
Yeah, I wouldn't call this fake news. I mean, it's obviously news that it was true. I don't think anyone's disputing that it came from the set. But
no, because we saw the armor they're wearing in the teaser for Discovery.
So what is it? Tell us, John. What was this?
It was kind of like a staging area, I think, while people are waiting for scenes to be filmed. But it was a room full of what looked like Klingons. And while they look like similar to Klingons we've seen in the past, they are quite different, especially in uniform. And they still have the ridges on the head, but it's just...
They look much more alien-like.
Yeah. And granted, you have better production abilities now, and you want to use the most of the high def, but I just think sometimes they might be going a little bit too far in the reimagining. If this is still the prime timeline, and I know you and I differ on this.
Well, I want to get into it because I want to get more into that concept as part of the main segment at the end of the show.
Okay.
But, yeah, so apparently somebody, I guess he might have been one of someone released a photo on Instagram is what it was, and he did say something like hanging out with my Klingon buddies or
fellow Klingons or something like that. Yeah,
something to that effect. So I don't know if we don't even know who he was. Was he an extra himself? Was he one of the Klingons? Was he just someone who worked there? Was he visiting the set? No one knows. The photo was taken down from Instagram quickly, but of course people had already done the screen captures and it was out.
Yeah. And was this, a planned leak, to keep people talking about the series since they've had to push it back twice now, they want to keep it fresh in people's minds. So I wouldn't put it past the, CBS and the production companies to, put something out there to keep the fans talking.
It's possible. Now he did. Apparently, this guy he did say something later though that they just look like Klingons to me or something to that effect. Like trying to play it down. So
yeah.
There's nothing to say that they are. I mean, there's no confirmation that they are in fact Klingons. It's 100% speculation because, they are wearing those uniforms, but no one knows if those uniforms are Klingon uniforms.
But, yeah. I mean, the ridged forehead, I mean, granted, there were other aliens that had ridges on their foreheads, but those really look like Klingon foreheads to me.
I don't know. I mean, they have – their whole heads are elongated too. And
there was
like,
a few that was elongated, but not all of them.
I don't know. I mean, the spine thing looks like it goes all the way back to the back of their head, all the way down their back.
Well, I thought some Klingons had that. Didn't Chang have something that went more towards the back? I think so.
I don't remember. So, if that's the case, then maybe it's not a huge departure then.
Yeah, I mean, and... Granted, I mean, also people put out, maybe they're like a different Klingon. I mean, this was, the original series had no ridges. Enterprise had the traditional ridges. So, maybe it's some kind of hybrid or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're right. All right. Well, we'll talk more about, the reimagining reboot, thing a little later. So, but anyway, did we have anything for Quark's Bazaar this episode or not?
Not really. I did get two new ships, from Eagle Moss. I got it was called the Klingon Attack Cruiser, which is the it's the Vorcha class. Cruiser from the Next Generation, I believe. And I also got the Bajoran Solar Sailor. which it's a very fragile model because it came and like three of the sails had been broken off just in shipping. So, and once again, the Eagle Moss is amazing. That I've read some bad reviews, like I said before, online, but 5 minutes after the day I received it, 5 minute call to Eagle Moss, and they shipped me out a new one. So
did you see the interview that they did on Truck Yards with
I didn't watch it. I wasn't able to watch it all. For some reason, whenever I watch something like long episodes on YouTube, it'll go to commercial like about 10 minutes in, and then it'll just spin. So I'll start watching something and then I never get back to it.
I'm like that too. There's so much out there. We don't have too much for Quark's Bazaar. I mean, the holodeck segment, again, we already talked about the Axanar FASA project. Our FASA RPG, I went on hiatus on that. Couple reasons behind that. I didn't really talk about it too much, but one was I got a little overwhelmed with that one adventure I started making, because I usually do published adventures because I don't have time, John. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of based on one of the published adventures, Starfleet intelligence mission.
Right.
But I was going to modify it kind of heavily, and I just realized it was going to be a lot more work than I realized. And I kind of got a little overwhelmed with where I was going to take it. It was probably fortuitous because now we got the Axanar FASA project that we can work on.
Right.
Which I wouldn't have been able, definitely wouldn't have able to been be able to do both.
I'm planning on running the module to return to Axanar sometime in the future. So I'm in the process. Perfect. I'm in the process of reading the supplement to that, which is the 4-year war, and then the adventure module. But I mean, all this is going to be research as well. So it's like killing two birds with one stone. Gives you a break from DMing, but Modifius just released the second part of Star Trek, or the next module for Star Trek Adventures Alpha Test, which we're playing on the 22nd of this month, February. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm almost done reading the Starship mechanics. So I've been able to read everything this time. So I feel good. I even bought a bag of blank dice so I can make some challenge dice.
Oh, nice.
So
how do you mark them?
I'm just going to use a bag of 25 was like $6.99. I'm just going to use a permanent marker.
Okay. And so what how many sided dice are they? You have a mix, or
they're all 6-sided.
Okay. So that's right, because
challenge dice are 6. They have the 1, 2, two blanks, and then the two effect sides, which I was gonna use the Star Trek Delta Shield for the effect logo. So
nice.
And I also bought them because I want to make some fudge dice for our Mind Jammer game.
Okay. Nice. All that. Yeah. So that's right. So we got in a couple of days, we've got the next Modifius Star Trek playtest. Wes is running that. He also, I guess, is going to run the Mind Jammer.
Yes.
For us as well.
Yep.
I got the D&D itch again, so I'm starting a new Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition campaign. I miss some D&D, man. I know it's not Star Trek, but hey, the holodeck is the holodeck. You go in there to do all sorts of things, so yeah. We can still talk about all these on the podcast.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. I got my Sword Coast Adventurers guide because I'm going to be playing a rogue swashbuckler, human,
nice,
chaotic neutral. So he's going to have probably kind of like a Captain Jack Sparrow flair.
Ooh. Nice. That'll be good. I'm looking forward to that. Okay. So, yeah, we'll have updates on all of these things in our upcoming episodes. Shall we move on to Hailing Frequencies Open?
We shall.
All right. The frequencies are opening. And I am hailing Captain John Alley.
Captain Alley here. Yeah, I wasn't prepared for any sound effects for this, so maybe post-production. Maybe. Pity, pity. Hailing frequencies open.
All right. So, the big thing. It was kind of the continuation of the discussion about the discovery of Klingons, and you know, I guess this idea, you know, so Trek Yards, they released an episode talking about, is it a reboot, is it a reimagining? You know, it's pretty clear that I think this the show is going to definitely have its own look and feel.
Yeah, I have a question. Maybe you can answer this, Garen.
Yeah,
is Trek Yards all those guys do? I mean, I love everything they do, but man, they put out a lot of videos. Yeah.
It's
like I'd love to put stuff out. I mean, the quality and the amount of information they put out, and it's like I was thinking just watching one of the ones recently. I was like, do these guys work? Because I want to know what they do.
Nah, well, I know one of them. Commander Cockings, he mentioned that he works full time on Trek Yards. So I know that's his full time job. Okay.
Slightly jealous, but okay.
And they've got a big Patreon following, so they you know, they get some income through Patreon to produce this stuff. So
cool.
More power to them. I'm not sure about the Captain Foley. I'm not sure if he has a daytime job or not, but
I mean, whatever the, like I said, I love everything they put out. He does his loot crate boxes and the unboxing. I love everything they do. It's just the amount. I was just looking at like the time frame, like how much they put out like in a week, and it's like I'd love to be able to match that, but it's like, whoa, I can't.
Got responsibilities.
I know.
But yeah, they did an episode just talking about, is it a reboot or is it not, and what's a reboot mean, and so you know, there's actually, I saw it somewhere and I was trying to find it before the show, John, but there were some quotes from Brian Fuller, you know, who started off as being the showrunner. Of course, he had since left, and we talked about that on the show.
Right. Well, he's still going to be listed as executive producer, so.
Yeah. But some months back, in his last year, you know, there were some quotes about him specifically talking about the visual look of the show, and that, you know, and I remember reading this, and it's like, so this really shouldn't be a surprise, because the information was out there. You know, he specifically said that, you know, the look of the aliens, they were going to have a different take on that. And just the show in general, although that was set in quote-unquote the prime timeline, was they were going to have their own take on the look of it. So, you know, so what I'm thinking is, I guess we can pose it in a question. Is, so if the ships are really going to look different and not adhere to the TOS style, the aliens are going to look very different, assuming those were Klingons.
Right.
Does that, can that in fact be in the Prime timeline then, or not? What do you think?
My gut reaction is no. I mean, if it's going to be a reboot, reimagine, you need to call it that. But if it's going to be the Prime timeline, you need to stick with some continuity between, you know, Enterprise to the original series. Granted, you can't do, I mean, that was the 60s. I mean, you can't have like little glowing gems for your control panels, but I think Enterprise, the way they did it, it was still the Prime universe, but they modernized it, yet made it look older. And I think that's a possibility, but I think making everything look different is just, I don't like the idea of that. I think there should be continuity, you know. There's canon for a reason. Star Trek 2009, the Kelvin universe, was able to get away with that, and their Klingons looked different, but I mean, even their uniforms still had the classic, kind of like classic cut. I mean, you still had the sash. The ships looked different, but again, all this is because of the Narada.
Well, not, but remember though, you know, that it was still theoretically the Prime timeline up until when the Narada came in. So basically, the Kelvin itself, those uniforms, obviously that ship looked advanced. I mean, you could not, there's no way you could take the Kelvin and stick it into TOS and not have it stick out like a sore thumb.
True.
In its uniform. So,
but going back to Axanar, they used a lot of the ship designs from the Kelvin universe, and changed put the classic warp nacelles on it.
Yeah.
So I mean,
and they used the uniforms, but you know, yeah. I think you do have to acknowledge that, you know, there's some differences between a fan film and, you know, a millions, you know, dollar production, you know, TV show. That's, you know, so I guess, let me just follow this up with the next question though, as far as the timeline. So is it possible, so what do you think about this? So if it's Prime timeline from the sense of the characters, the history, the background, the universe, the story, like everything adheres to what we know in terms of the information, and it's just the visual that changes. What do you think about that?
I can live with it. As long as they don't go, you know, retconning a lot of the history before, what took place on Enterprise and such. I can live with it, but yeah, I mean, like, production values have gone up. People want more shock and awe in their visual effects. So I can see that. I'd still like to see, you know, the classic designs remaining, you know, such as Klingon ships, but I can understand that the visual effects are going to be different. But as long as the story's good and they remain true to canon, I'm willing to look past a lot of things, I think.
Yeah, so it's to me, the way I look at it is probably going to be a reimagining, but not a reboot. Because reboot to me means it's not just visual, it's the story itself and the character. Like, so for example, a classic example is Battlestar Galactica. Did you watch the rebooted Battlestar Galactica?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great show. And to me, that was a reboot, right? That it was a visual reboot. and everything else reboot, right? In the sense that, I mean, even the characters, right? I mean, yeah. You had a female Starbuck.
A female Boomer.
That's a reboot. That's a fundamental change from the original.
Right.
And just everything, you know, the character Baltar was so much different. And, you know, the fact that the Cylons, you know, they had the human looking variants of the Cylons and all. So that to me is a reboot of story itself. Although
they did pay homage to the original, because, I mean, they did have like some of the original Vipers, and in the museum they had the original Cylon Centurion armor. So they did say like that model was previous, but yeah, no, overall it was a reimagining reboot. I mean, the ships look different. I mean, the Galactica, the Pegasus, like the captain of the Pegasus. I can't remember what her name was, but originally it was played by Lloyd Bridges, so.
Yeah, so it's definitely, like, to me that's a true reboot, while is with the Star Trek Discovery, I think it could just be a visual, like the ships, the aliens, the uniforms, while everything else could still be seamless with the timeline as far as the events and characters and stuff. So
but you see, you still want your classic Starfleet design, you know, your saucer, your secondary hull, your warp nacelles. I mean,
we'll see that.
Yeah, I think. I mean, we're already seeing it. It's just,
it's the details that you know. Apparently, there's an edict that the ships will not have round or you know, cylindrical warp nacelles.
See, like the ones on Discovery, they're more square. Almost looks like, you know, it's a casing with possibly three nacelles within the casing. And I don't have a problem with square. But you'd like to see, like, you know, within the fleet, some with the round, the classic cylindrical warp nacelles. I mean, you want to see them pay respect to what has gone on in the past. Just like Battlestar Galactica did, you know. It doesn't have to be a main ship. It could be just something in the background.
Yeah. Well, here's another. Let me pose an example to you and just kind of look at it as an open mind. I want to get your thoughts on this. So, if you kind of really look at it and just, you know, kind of be objective about it and maybe kind of take away a lot of the baggage and stuff that we know now, obviously. If you look at TOS and then you look at the motion picture, if I'm really honest with myself, I have to say that the motion picture was a visual reimagining of TOS. I mean, those two, I mean, the production value, the design of the Enterprise, the you know, the space dock, the sets compared to the sets in the original series, the initial detail, the different uniforms, the Klingons. I mean, we're talking about Klingons.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the Klingons were an obvious reimagining. I mean, yeah, they were retconned later, but again, put yourself in 1979. Star Trek, the motion picture, was a visual reimagining of TOS at the time.
You're right. You're right. the ship, I mean, you get new technology, and I think the design of the ship illustrated that. I mean, you get the warp technology, the nacelles advanced, and granted, the main reason, I mean, in universe, I mean, it was technology advancing, and for the real world, it was just, you know, they wanted the best on the screen. They wanted, you know, flash and bang.
Yeah.
And I mean, that scene in the motion picture, and they reused it in the Wrath of Khan. I think those are some of the best shots of the Enterprise out there. As for the uniforms, I mean, you were in the military. Military is always changing uniforms. I mean, in the past 10 years, I think the Army's gone through 3 different changes. I mean, from your basic camouflage BDUs to the ACUs, and now there's a different camouflage pattern. I'm not sure what it's called, but I mean, military's always changing uniforms, so.
I have to say, though, I mean, if you, let's say within the same movie or episode, like, if you mix the sets and effects, ship design, everything else, I'm not even, and go back, I mean, take out the, what do they call it when they redid the TOS episodes a few years ago, remastered, I think they called it, added in some effects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. I mean, take that piece out. Just look at the original. I don't think you could have TOS and TMP style production values on the same show. Like, they would clash. Like,
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
So, but then look at the facts, though. They shouldn't, right? Because the motion picture is only supposed to be, you know, 2 or 3 years after the end of the 5-year missions. I mean, you're talking less than 5 years between the motion picture events and TOS events.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it was like 2.5, I think, from...
Yeah.
Yeah, from Kirk took the desk job. I think he said he was been away for like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you look at it in that respect, we've seen changes before that have been hugely significant. And that was only 10 years later.
Yeah.
Right. Now we're talking what, 50 years later,
right,
in production values in terms of the in universe, you know, timeline. And, you know, so.
Well, and like you mentioned Trek Yards again, I mean, we're going to hopefully give them a lot of traffic, but no, I'm joking. Hopefully they'll give us some, but, they did one because on the teaser they got a glimpse of the L cars.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, that looks like it's going to be standard again in Discovery.
Which, face it, you got to have visual displays like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like
so,
like in the original series, you had no idea what they were looking at. Like, you don't know how they knew what controlled what. I mean, but even when you go to the motion picture, it was still like it gone from multicolored jewels to like a panel of green buttons that, you know,
yeah,
really didn't know what. The only thing you really knew for sure that what operated was the handle they put in for Sulu to go to warp.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, it's and the other thing too is, you know, I think you and I are similar, John, in terms of what we like about Star Trek. I mean, we pretty much like all aspects of it: the story, the characters, the setting. But we also really like the technology and the ships, and we're into the uniforms. But there, you know, and Trek Yards is like that too. Let's face it, there are a lot of Star Trek fans that those technical aspects are of not as interest to them as much, right? And I think there's many, many Star Trek fans that really don't care so much about that stuff.
Right. They just want a good sci-fi story, and in the end, if the stories are good, if the acting's good, I think I'll be just as happy with Discovery as I have been with all the other incarnations of Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think what they're doing is probably the right thing. I mean, you know, because look, I mean, they need to get new Star Trek fans, just like TNG did back in 87.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, you got to have a show that's on the cutting edge visually. And to rebuild Star Trek and get it back into the where it should be, it's probably the right thing to do. I mean, we still got the fan films, Axanar. I mean, these other things, you know, they can pick up the mantle of the TOS look. But I think to move Star Trek forward, they would have to do something like this.
Yeah.
I'm still
up in the air. I mean, I pay for CBS All Access already, because a lot of the sporting events interfere with the shows we watch. So I've been paying for CBS All Access for a couple years now, but I just don't know how that's going to affect new people coming to the show, because I mean, a lot of the shows you can get other places. And I saw somebody comment just the other day on Facebook. They said, "Well, I'm not gonna pay for CBS All Access. I'll just wait for somebody to upload it to YouTube." You know, it's like people are gonna.
Oh, they crack down on that.
Oh yeah, they will. But you know, there's other, I guess, pirate streaming applications out there.
It'll be released on, you know, Blu-ray.
I just wish they went with like one of the, like, you know, streaming platforms that are well established, that have shows that are doing great, such as Netflix, which they're in other countries they're releasing Star Trek Discovery on Netflix, Amazon Prime. Like the Amazon Prime, we love the Man in the High Castle. We think that's an amazing series. I think CBS could have teamed up with one of those, and you know.
I agree in the sense that it sounds like it makes sense, and it would be easier and better. But you know, it's their CBS, their Paramount. They have their own streaming service.
I think it's going to limit it. To which I think what they want to do is bring in new fans, but I think having to subscribe to another streaming service is going to limit that greatly. I don't know. We'll see. I just don't want it to limit to such a degree that it, we only get one season. That's my biggest fear.
they're obviously putting the effort and the money into this. I mean, you know, the detractors who think, oh, it's going to fail and I'm not going to watch it and it's going to be horrible. I mean, number one, we know very, very little about it. So that's just a ridiculous position to take. And then number two is like, oh, come on. Why? And they've got the heavy hitters. I mean, yeah, we lost Brian Fuller, but look at the other writers that they've hired.
Oh yeah, I'm not doubting that it's going to be a great show.
It's going to be their flagship show, and you know, this is the business model now. Doesn't mean they can't change it later. Sure. And I would say, look, I mean, from the perspective of the subscriptions bring in the money, and they don't have to rely on Nielsen ratings and that junk. Sure. You know, so.
Well, they get the money from subscriptions, and then they still have commercials on it. And I think you can pay extra if you want to get it commercial free.
Oh yeah, so. And I'm gonna have to do that. I can't have the commercials, man.
Mr. Moneybags.
I pulled the plug, man, and you know, so I watched. Like that show, so the show The Expanse, which I love, I watched that after it was released for streaming, not when it was on Sci-Fi. Uh-huh. But then the second season just came out, and I download, you know, so I got the Sci-Fi app, but you still have to watch the commercials. It's like, man, I can't do this, man. It like ruins it. it just there's so many commercials. I mean, a 1 hour TV show nowadays is only like 39, 40 minutes long.
Yeah, I think it's between 40 and 42 minutes. It's the same way.
40 minutes of commercials, and there's like a commercial every 10 freaking minutes. And it ruins the show. It's like, I watched the first episode of the second season of The Expanse. Like, I can't do it. I'm just going to wait until they release the full season, and then I'll watch it.
Yeah, so. I watched like the first five episodes of The Expanse. I need to finish that. I really enjoyed that.
So. It gets a lot better too, by the way. The first season progressively gets better.
Okay.
But all right, man. Well, not to beat a dead horse, I think that kind of wraps up my opinion and on the reimagining / reboot conversation.
Hey, in the end, it has Star Trek in the title. I'm going to be watching it.
That's right. It's for real fans.
That's right.
The real fans.
Well, the real fans would have watched all the animated series, so
I'll leave that one for the next episode.
I'm still going to pick an episode for us to do the commentary, which I think I might have found one because I was reading through the little booklet that comes with the DVD set. And yes. Actually, it refers to, I forget what episode it was, but it says Dr. Spock. And I was like, wait, is this like the pediatrician?
Yes.
And some people probably don't understand that. The late, or the 60s, there was a pediatrician named Dr. Spock that put out a book for kids that all parents like referred to. So
that's... Well, when my mom heard Spock, that's what she thought it was back when I was watching it in the 80s. All right, man. Well, I got to get some lunch. I think that about wraps it up, unless there's anything else you want to talk about.
Nope, I think that's it. I think hopefully we'll be back in another week or two with the next episode. This is our fourth episode, so we'll be on episode 5.
Yeah. It's the 20th. February when we record this, Guy McLemore said he'd be available early March. So maybe the other time that we can get him for the next episode. We'll see what happens. So
yeah, I'm still working. All right. I'm still working on getting everything smooth out on the sound side. I mean, we had a little issues getting started today, but I think it looks like everything's good. So yeah, we'll have him on soon.
All right, great. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. And we will see you next time on Trek Talk. Take care.
Take it easy, everybody.